Bob's special guest on the Celebrity Hotline.
Yeah, we've got two folks on the line. Have I ever introduced you and our audio radiance to Colonel Doug O'Connell and Ken Irvin?
Not yet.
All right. Well, I'd like to do that now. Gentlemen, howdy.
Good morning.
Yeah, good morning. There's a lot of bad attorneys around town. There's a lot of good attorneys. But I'll tell you this, if I ever got in trouble, I would want you to, especially if I was a cop. And by way of introduction, Eric, Ken Irvin, when you see you'll see these guys. Let me back up one step. You likely have heard that last week, the Travis County DA Garza, and DA stands for more than district attorney in this case, in my humble opinion, indicted 19 Austin cops in one fell swoop.
Heard all that, yeah.
Yeah, this is the most, we think, in history in any city in the country all at once. And it made big national news, which I'm sure is exactly which was part of the plan. Several of those attorneys, how many is it, eight?
We have one, two, three, four.
That you're representing.
I believe five attorneys total for all 19.
Right, but how many are you two representing?
We're representing eight officers.
Eight of the 19. Gotcha. And again, by way of introduction, what I know about Ken, and correct me what I'm wrong about here, is that you spent some time in the Harris County District Attorney's Office, and then 10 years up to about 2018, right there in the very office in Travis County that is doing this indictment. Is that right, Ken?
That's pretty close, yeah. I spent 10 years combined between misdemeanor and felony prosecution offices in Travis County. And while I was a felony prosecutor, a number of years was investigating police officer shootings, other use of force cases, police in custody deaths, and presenting those cases in a fair, neutral manner to a grand jury for review.
You know how that's supposed to be done.
Absolutely. It for years.
And the other guy we've been honored to talk to maybe a little bit more over time is, I call him Colonel Doug O'Connell, because he was a colonel in the United States Army Special Forces, Green Beret. Those brave men of the Green Beret. You know, a lot of your law cases, I saw on the internet, I think, yesterday, that Colonel, that you specialize somewhat in military justice cases. But along came a couple of cops here a couple of years ago, Paft and Petraeus, and the two of you teamed up and showed a jury that wasn't even under Garza, that this was just a completely bogus claim. And I think there were 12, 13 counts, 16. You got an innocent, a not guilty on all of them, both of you gentlemen.
Yeah, so it was 11 counts, and we got not guilty verdicts on each and every one of those. That was the first case that we ended up working together, and it obviously turned out spectacular.
And since then, you're the go-to guys for an awful lot of police officers. You kind of knew this was coming, but what are the details? Because all people have heard is, you know, that cops indiscriminately used murder weapons, deadly weapons, to shoot people and hurt them, and it's attempted murder charges and all kinds of stuff in this deal. What's the other side of this? What's the real truth?
Yeah, so there are no murder charges, but there are first-degree felonies on each of our clients. Aggravated assault by a public servant. And those charges stem from firing beanbag shotgun rounds at folks who are rioting.
Now, you had a press conference yesterday, both of you gentlemen, and I believe you said that the majority of these cases are going to be from the incident up there on I-35 where the protesters went and took over the interstate.
Yeah, certainly the majority of our clients fit that bill, and we believe that there are other officers indicted for the same act. So this was when I-35 was completely blocked in both directions, and it needed to be cleared so that everybody could start using the interstate again. And so there was a coordinated effort to use smoke and chemical irritant gas to do that. And a few of the folks ignoring commands to leave the bridge and not to touch the devices.
And how were they given the commands? Well, could they hear it?
Yeah, so we will be provided all of the footage that there is, but our understanding is that it was loud, it was ongoing for a long time, and the commands came from multiple places, including the police helicopter overhead.
And they have some kind of special audio device for things like this. I forget what it's called.
The LRAD, yeah, long-range acoustical device, which our understanding was also used during the riots.
Okay, so are the officers being attacked?
Yeah, in many cases, they were. They were on the receiving end of bottles, frozen water bottles, bricks, rocks, fireworks.
At least one Molotov cocktail that fortunately failed to light. That individual was federally prosecuted.
And so they're giving the lawful order. Some leave, some don't. Who gave the order to go ahead and use these non-lethal crowd control weapons?
We don't know the answer to that with specificity yet, but it was certainly the Austin Police Department leadership. The other question that I'm looking forward to finding out is who gave the order to clear I-35?
Well, I mean, somebody had to, but it seems like a no-brainer. I mean, you've got to ensure that an interstate isn't shut down for the safety of the people on the interstate and for the safety of the people that have put themselves up there unlawfully on the interstate. That's the responsibility of law enforcement.
Well, I'd certainly agree with that, but I don't know that Mr. Garza agrees with that.
In fact, in that press conference yesterday, you gentlemen said that he admitted to you that he didn't know necessarily who shot certain beanbag rounds, so he just indicted all these 19, so maybe he'd catch them.
Yeah, that's right. There's been an admission in writing that the office, in some circumstances, was unable to determine which officer fired a beanbag that hit a certain person. And so, right, like you said, they just indicted everybody they could identify on camera who fired, you know, in that direction at that time.
And, you know, there was a lot made of this at the time, and I'm hearing it again, that it had been so long since Austin had been in a crowd control situation like that, that they weren't prepared. I mean, I think Chief Chacon admitted that in his conference last week, that, you know, they were prepared for hundreds of protesters, not thousands. Well, they didn't have it. They had every cop, I understand, they could get there. But it does appear as if they were somewhat unmanned, and that the equipment they were issued, these beanbags that go in the that they fire, apparently have expiration dates, and if they get old, they can really harm you. They harden or something, and they're not supposed to do that. On top of that, the body shields that they were issued, you know, to block these things being thrown at them, essentially just almost immediately disintegrated. They were so old and hadn't been used. Is there any truth to all that? And it does paint a picture, if some of it is true, that we weren't prepared.
I think that's fair. And I think Chief Chacon would say and has said basically the same. The department wasn't expecting that size of a riot and really was caught flat-footed. But, you know, none of that is our client's fault.
And are the tapes going to probably show that they warned them many times to get back? And what would trigger them, so to speak, into firing one of those beanbag guns? That they had been directly attacked, or just because they had moved beyond a perimeter line?
Well, there's going to be a number of situations. So you've got the incident on the bridge, but then you've got other incidents in different areas, whether it's outside of APD main headquarters or City Hall. So you had different scenarios, but the beanbags weren't fired indiscriminately into the crowd. The beanbags were targeted at individuals who showed signs of violence or were actively being violent. And so you've got to remember, these people not only put the police in danger, but the peaceful protesters as well.
There were so many incidents. Was this the one where they first tried to take over the police station to get inside and they were held off there and then said, well, let's just go up on 35? Did that seem to be the case?
Yes. And it's important to keep in mind that some of our clients who are indicted didn't even fire beanbags at anyone. But that's how broad these indictments are.
And this will, I'm not going to put out the names. You'll probably hear of some of these officers indicted. They're finally all coming out as they've all been processed, booked, arrested, in essence, surrendered. This is going to ruin their life for the next, who knows, couple of years, right? I mean, just to drag them through all this. And the consequence of this, the ramification, is it takes the cop off duty for the next 2 years. And this is equivalent, as you've likely heard, to two patrol shifts in this critical time of shortage. They can't go out there and work.
That's right. So this certainly doesn't help with the understaffing that we already have in APD, sort of inability to get sufficient new talent to come on board. And I, frankly, I don't blame people for not applying to APD at this time.
Yeah. What is the morale? You guys are well in touch with other police officers in our department, so you're close to what they're the men and women are thinking there. How would you tell us why do they go to work? How are they feeling now?
Well, the people we talk to, some of them tell us, you know, obviously it's bad. And what we're hearing is that there's a culture shift from officers proactively policing the community, you know, looking for issues to fix. And now it's don't do anything. Sit in your car and take the calls as they come in, but the more you interact with the public and the more you try to, you know, fight or prevent or solve crime, the greater chance you have of getting indicted.
One of the things we're seeing is officers, you know, they can earn an additional 25% of their income working overtime. But the downside to that is that's 25% more opportunity for Jose Garza to indict you. And so they're not inclined to do overtime anymore. And we're going to start seeing more and more impacts to that. Over the weekend, we had the Austin Marathon. Because of the lack of officers willing to work overtime, our understanding is that the department had to pull officers off of regular shifts. And I think this is going to continue to the point where it's going to be difficult in our city to have some of these special events.
Well, our shifts now are dangerously, embarrassingly understaffed, undermanned, underwomaned 24 hours a day.
Yeah, so, I mean, think how this plays out. Are we going to be able to really have events like South by Southwest and ACL Fest if officers aren't going to sign up for voluntary overtime? And, you know, TCSO could help out, I guess, but they have their own manning problems. And DPS, even if they were inclined to help the city of Austin, their guys and gals are busy on the border. So, you know, we've seen situations in the past. I don't know that it's ever been this severe. And I think, you know, I've heard from some business leaders that are concerned about the impact of this manning crisis on events like South By and ACL.
Well, the impact is far-reaching right now. If your catalytic converter is stolen, there's nobody coming. Worse, if your business is burglarized or your home is burglarized, you get home and find it. If the bad guy's still not there, then it's not a crime scene. The police are not coming, ever, ever. You call 311. That's the policy now. It's not the reality because they can't get there in time. It's the policy in Austin, Texas. It's kind of hard to believe and stomach, but so is this situation. Why is this district attorney Garza, why is he doing this?
That's a million-dollar question. And
well, Ken, my number's not exactly right, but going back to last March or April, and he's only been in office, what, a little over a year? right?
That's right.
Yeah. I count 60 or 62 police or police-related officials that he has sought indictment on since being in office. And if that's right, it's close to right. That's probably more than the number of cops totally ever in front of a grand jury for indictment in the whole history of the county.
You know, I don't know the numbers specifically, but that doesn't shock me.
Well, they are extraordinary, are they not? I mean, he's going back years and years, and in every case, I guess, certainly in these cases, this was all fully investigated and cleared, right?
They were. Our officers were cleared by Internal Affairs. But remember, Bob, we're not done yet with the riots. He is not done indicting people.
There will be more?
We believe there could be more. And the reason it was only 19 and not a higher number was because he wanted to finish what he could in order to announce the indictments on the same day the city's civil lawsuit settlements were indicted. We've seen him do that shady kind of stuff in the past. You'll remember he announced the indictment of Chris Taylor on the same day Senator Sarah Eckhart introduced the Mike Ramos bill. And he announced the indictments of the Williamson County deputies on the same day that state rep from Round Rock was indicting a bill honoring Javier Ambler.
So, yeah, Tallarico.
Yeah. And so he has repeatedly done this where he, on one hand, will say these officers are presumed innocent, but he'll make the announcement in a way to magnify his message in order to make the public think our clients are automatically guilty.
He'll say that, you're right. He will say, now let's remember in our fairness that, you know, all these officers are innocent until proven guilty, but these officers must atone for what they did. Now, those don't jive.
No, not at all.
If guilty, at least have the memory to have that qualifier, but it's like the whole place down there. They're not attorneys. They're really activists. They are attorneys, many of which joined the organization leadership position, you know, just as activists, but they had a JD. So they're activists.
Well, certainly in the leadership positions, we know a lot of folks, not a lot anymore, but we know folks at the district attorney's office, some that, you know, were there when we both worked there. But we're also hearing that people are leaving that office left and right in droves because it's not the kind of place that they feel comfortable practicing law.
It is important, and I appreciate you talking about it, the press conference yesterday with us here today, to let folks know that, you know, because they're just hearing the headline that, you know, the cops just out of control. And of course, the story that's been spun for so long is by our city council alone is our citizens have the right to peaceful protest. This is not what we're talking about here.
No, it's not. And there is a line that gets crossed at some point when it moves into riot territory.
When you try to break into the police station to take it over, that's a good one.
Yep, that's a very good example. And one thing I want to mention regarding the bridge, whenever our officers used the smoke and the gas to clear the bridge, that was phenomenally effective. It got a very large group of people off of the interstate without having to touch them or do anything else. We have reason to believe that tool, the gas, the smoke, was made unavailable to officers prior to that.
Well, remember, the city council didn't want it used at all. They felt it inhumane and ordered the then police chief, Brian Manley, not to use it anymore.
Right. So we're going to be delving into that more to see what's there. And the point is, you know, I get it from a political perspective. The optics are bad if there is a riot in your city and tear gas is used to clear out a crowd. But it's a good tool. It was an effective tool. And if that was made unavailable to them on other occasions by civilian city leadership, that's something we're going to be looking into because it you know, it mitigates whatever the officers may have done later if their hands were tied from using this more effective device.
So the good thing about these depositions and subpoenas you'll get to have sent out and maybe even trials is the ability to maybe uncover how political agendas have resulted in illegal, possibly resulted in illegal control of our city's law enforcement, which when it's illegal is obviously bad, but when you're making decisions here that lead totally to anarchy, or if we don't have police, we clearly have elements in town that want to see anarchy, then this is no longer like a civil society.
Bob, I largely agree with you, but you know, police department is under civilian control. The police chief answers to the city manager, who answers to the city council. So there is no question about, you know, if the city council gives a decision that certain tools aren't going to be used to handle riots, then that would be legal.
If it goes through the city manager.
Yeah, but also I'd point out at this point,
good point,
what city leaders think is irrelevant. Jose Garza is now in charge of riot control. He is the one who, from here on out, decides what tools these officers can use. And we know they can't use beanbags anymore, or they will be indicted. We know they can't use gas anymore. So I presume Mr. Garza's answer is officers must go hands-on. In other words, they have to try to arrest people by laying hands on them. And we know...
Now, the optics of that are always pretty, aren't they?
Exactly. And yeah. And it leads to more citizens being hurt and officers being hurt. Nothing good comes from that.
What a mess. Well, I'm sure glad you two gentlemen have... Because this is not where you as attorneys make any real money. This is... I gather more of something from my other conversations with you. There's a higher good going on here, which is why you're involved.
Yeah. You know, our clients were simply out there doing their job, doing their best under an extraordinarily difficult situation. And we both believe it's incredibly regrettable that people were injured, but none of our clients' actions amounted to criminal conduct.
And last question is that, you know, most of, well, all 19, as they were technically arrested, surrendered, and were booked, were allowed to avoid being jailed with a $1 bond, which is obviously reasonable. But given the circumstances here, was that sort lots being made of that, and I can see that, you know, the dollar was kind of a slap in the face since so many people get just personal recognizance. I mean, do they really think, if it's a dollar especially, that these cops are flight risks?
You know, I think all we're going to say to that is setting bail is a function of the judiciary, setting an appropriate bail amount. That was done, and it was a dollar for all of our clients. And, you know, we're going to leave it at that.
Hey, Bob, if I could... on the chance in your listening audience out there, there are people who were in the cars that were trapped on I-35. We'd like to talk to them. And so if you were surrounded and trapped in the cars and rescued by APD during the riots, we'd like to hear from you and ask you to please call 512-547-7265, 512-547-7265. Talk to Ashley and let her know what happened to you. That could be very important in helping some of these officers.
Yeah, maybe some folks know some folks that have already told their stories there and can tell them. And so likely if you're driving or whatever, you didn't get that number, shoot me an email. If you know somebody or you are one of those folks, Bob Cole at KOKEFM.com, and I will get you in touch with Colonel O'Connell and Mr. Irvin here. Gentlemen, we could, there's so many questions asked, but, and I know you're limited still in what you can say, but I, very appreciative for our community and kind of showing the bigger picture here of what they were up against, what may have actually happened, not what we're hearing. In fact, you talked about timing of certain things. It hasn't been lost on a lot of people that these indictments came out right during the early voting of elections. And additionally, the city council met an executive session on Wednesday, which is very rare, if ever. They do that on Thursdays. But they had to hurry up and do this on Wednesday to settle with two people for $10 million, claiming their injuries and sustained injuries from being there just to peacefully protest. So they've already decided they're guilty, and even ahead of trials and all, had to rush so that could be part of District Attorney Gross's statement that we're already paying these people that have been injured, which it implies guilt when you settle for $10 million to two people. Would you concur?
Well, you know, it's important for listeners to understand there's two different legal actions going on.
Civil and criminal.
Civil and criminal. And if the beanbag rounds were defective and they didn't fly straight or they hit with more force than they should have, then that might be a valid civil lawsuit, but not a criminal law action. And that's the important distinction. But when you lump them together and make these indictment announcements on the same day,
which he did,
shady,
you said, yes, sound like another word, and that would be accurate as well. Very good. Well, gentlemen, thank you for your efforts, and again for the. I've already received, I can't tell you how many texts, and I'm watching here. Thank you so much for bringing the news of this crazy DA to light on the air, and for having these two attorneys on, from Russ Phillips, for instance. Thank you for what you're doing, and we would ask and invite that we can stay in touch. As they make headlines from the district attorney's office, you can help interpret it.
Yeah, we're happy to do that.
For us. Ken Irvin and Doug O'Connell, attorneys at law. Thank you, gentlemen.
You're welcome. Thanks, Bob.
Take care. It's, 12 minutes till 9.